Hello, I'm Rafik, and you're watching the Garbled Twistery Channel.
What is crack-a-lackin', folks? It's Garbled Twistery, and we are currently looking at the candidates for the Iron Throne of the United States for 1816. And apparently, there's this guy who everybody's keeping an eye on because he sure looks like he's ready to cause a ruckus. In fact, there have been whole theatrical musical productions written about this wild human, and his name is Nancy Drew Jackson. This Wally Kazam is up to something, I tell ya. So, where does Nancy Drew Jackson's story begin? Well, birth, obviously. Yeah, this dude was born in a wax museum in the Carolinas. His mom's name was Elizabeth, like literally everybody else's mom, and everybody called his dad Andy. And also, they were like kinda Scottish, kinda Irish, so think about the word potato and really cool skirts. Oh, and they were pretzeltarians too, when it comes to religion or whatever. His family bloodline on his dad's side is known as the Yorkshire Killing Line. Anyways, when his parents showed up in the US, they probably ended up in, like, Philly and then went mountain climbing and stopped right in between the Carolinas. Also, when they made this journey, Nancy Drew Jackson's older brothers were with them and born already and stuff. Yeah. 3 weeks before Nancy Drew Jackson even saw the light of day, his dad died because he got into a vicious argument with a tree stump, and that tree stump happened to have a machete. But yeah, single mom Elizabeth took Nancy Drew and his brothers to their auntie's house, and they lived there together, while Nancy Drew Jackson learned how to read and write from a couple local priest people. The thing is, nobody can really figure out, like, where Nancy Drew Jackson was even born. Like, his dad just died, and his pregnant mom was literally living in the middle of nowhere between the Carolinas, and nobody even charted where they were on a map, so for all I know, History Channel could be right, and he could be a straight-up Men in Black-style alien. I mean, later he did say he was born on some South Carolina plantation, but come on, that's just politics. How do we expect him to know that? It'd be different if his mom confirmed. And then there's some other evidence that came out later that was like, maybe he was born at a different uncle's house in North Carolina. It's loose evidence. Get it together, historians. Get it together. Anyways, Nancy Drew Jackson was a brat and a bully as a little kid. I mean, he did have a posse that had a bunch of nerds in it, but if you weren't in the posse, Nancy Drew Jackson was a rotten little brat. Okay, let's talk revolution. So, Nancy Drew Jackson's biggest bro straight up died in the Great American Temper Tantrum. Oh, and he didn't even die from bullets. Nope, Big Brother died at Sona Ferry because it was too hot outside. I am dead serious. Oh, and also there was this crazy battle that happened between the Carolinas right in Nancy Drew's backyard. And what was crazy about it? 113 revolutionary troops were straight up killed and 53 were captured while only 5 tea-sipping troops were killed. It was a blowout. So yeah, after all that, his mom Elizabeth was all like, quote, "Now, we can't just sit here and let those tea sippers do us like that. Y'all are joining the militia tomorrow," unquote. So yeah, Nancy Drew and his last living brother joined their local revolutionary militia as, like, delivery boys. They are professional iPhones, I tell ya, faxing all the invoices from accounting. The thing about that, though, is they got straight up captured by the tea sippers while they were hanging out at a friend's house. Yeah, and one of the officers was all like, hey, Nancy Drew Jackson, clean my boots. And judging from his childhood, Nancy Drew Jackson wasn't all about being told what to do. So he didn't do it and got freaking slashed across the face. His hand was slashed too. His brother Bobby also didn't clean the shoes and also got slashed for it. And like, both of them freaking got smallpox and nearly starved to death during this whole being captured by the tea sippers ordeal. So yeah, mom finally showed up and picked her kids, and they had to walk 40 miles to get home. And Big Brother Bobby was riding the only horse they had because the tea sippers really roughed him up good. And it gets even worse, though. When they were like 2 hours from the house, it started pouring rain, and the smallpox got even worse. So yeah, Bobby freaking died like 2 days after getting home, and Nancy Drew Jackson wasn't looking too hot either. After his mom got his literal existence back on track, she decided to be a school nurse for other army prisoners, and then she got cholera, and then she died. So now Nancy Drew Jackson is literally an orphan, and he is literally the stereotypical shonen anime antihero because he blames the T-Zippers for the deaths of his mother and brothers. And believe me when I say Nancy Drew is looking to avenge his clan. Anyways, the Great American Temper Tantrum ends, and Nancy Drew is going to public school all on and off and stuff, because, you know, hashtag orphan problems. None of his extended family wants to have him, because he was a bratty kid, and it's just not a good look for them to have, like, house orphans or whatever. So Nancy Drew Jackson ends up rotating living quarters between a bunch of friends' houses. In, like, the early 1780s, Nancy starts making saddles and teaching as a living, and that would have been fine for him if he didn't totally suck at both of those things. So he leaves his hometown for North Carolina and meets some schmuck named Spruce McKay, learns how to do lawyer stuff, and passes the bar when it's time to limbo. And then he phoned a friend that hooked him up with a prosecutor spot in a location that's going to turn into Tennessee but isn't Tennessee yet. On the way there, he crossed off some bucket list items, like buying his first slave and battling in his first Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel with some other hotshot lawyer. They both secretly agreed to throw the duel, and they did, so does it count? You decide. In the late 1780s, Nancy Drew starts living with the Donaldsons in Nashville. The homeowner is a widow, and her daughter is in a super unpleasant marriage situation. Like, her husband wasn't following what his anger management therapist was telling him to do at all, so they got separated, and Nancy Drew swooped in to marry her after, because he thought they straight up divorced. But it wasn't finalized, so the marriage was invalid, so they had to remarry again once the divorce was finalized, but Rachel was already calling herself Mrs. Jackson and living with Nancy Drew before the divorce petition was even made. I mean, what a freaking headache. It just goes to show that the further into the frontier, middle of nowhere, small town land you go, the less they care about paperwork. But enough about that hashtag complicated relationship status. What else was Nancy Drew Jackson up to professionally? Well, he entered the Tag Team Lawyer Championships with his buddy Johnny Ovaltine, and somehow they were lawyering about land that was reserved for indigenous Cherokee and Chickasaw peeps. Like, there was some random land grab legislation that opened up Native American lands in North Carolina to be snatched by whoever wanted them for, like, literally no reason. Yeah, super sketchy. So Nancy Drew Jackson moves to, like, Nashville or whatever, and he started, like, taking land grabbing lessons from Billy Blunt, who was like one of the most powerful land grubbers around. Needless to say, Nancy Drew was an attorney general in no time, and at Tennessee's Constitutecon, they got him to be a freaking delegate too. And when Tennessee became a state or whatever, they sent Nancy Drew Jackson to the big boy House of Reps. He was the only one they sent. And of course, he was a Democrat Republican, because who wasn't? But I mean, he was one of those wild, radical ones, though. Like, he was super into baguettes, and as one can imagine from the guy's childhood, he freaking hated those tea sippers with the burningest of passions. He wanted to pee on the Jay Treaty. He was out here talking about Jorge behind his back for not liking the Democrat Republicans enough. Like, there was a vote that came to the floor one day that was all like, hey, let's thank Mr. Washington for his hard work. And like a horse, it was a nay from Nancy Drew. So, 1797 comes around, and Tennessee makes our guy a big boy senator. He really didn't like doing that, though. Like, he's not all about debating the issues. Quote, all of you are doing too much. Honestly, I am disgusted. John Adams, get it together. I resign. Unquote. So, yeah. He comes home and Western Tennessee loves the guy, so they hand him a Tennessee Supreme Court seat, and everybody thinks he's doing a good job. Like, he's frank, but he seems fair. Still, Nancy Drew Jackson resigns from that Tennessee Supreme Court position in 1804. I mean, he said it was for his health, but if you check the tapes, he was losing a whole lot of money on some stupid investments, so maybe he resigned to get his house in order. Anyways, another thing Nancy Drew Jackson did when he came back to the tennis ball sea is he tried to become the judge man for the tennis ball sea militia. And they let him do it, of course. Oh, and Nancy Drew even had loftier ambitions, though. Like, he wanted to be the commander of the whole tennis ball militia. And basically, every able-bodied free dude in Tennessee was part of that freaking militia. I mean, the intention of these militias were to rough up some Europeans or Native Americans whenever it seemed necessary to the militia. If anything, it was basically a frat, but the kind that's full of bullies, and judging from his childhood, Nancy Drew Jackson was gonna fit right in. And he almost got commander. Like, he tied with Johnny Savivi, some hardened military dude who'd been around the block. He represented the east side of Tennessee. Yeah, Governor Archibald himself had to step in and pretty much was like, yo, I'm giving the job to Nancy Drew Jackson over here. He's got my vote. So now Nancy Drew Jackson is in the most powerful military and socio-political position in all of Tennessee. But wait, there's more. Soon after the super close election, Nancy Drew Jackson got some freaking dirt on Johnny Savivi, the dude he tied with. What kind of dirt, you say? Land fraud dirt. Like, Nancy Drew over here literally slipped the evidence over to Governor Archibald. In 1803, Savivi came back to run and try to win the governor's seat, so Archibald straight up spilled all that land fraud dirt to the public when that happened. And on top of that, freaking Nancy Drew over here wrote a whole article that was all like, quote, hey, Mr. Savivi, you're frauding people, you're bribing people, and let me tell you, you're not all that in a bag of chips, get over yourself. Unquote. And Savivi was all like, you wanna take this outside, bro? You wanna go? Let's go, man, I got my Blue Eyes White Dragon. They didn't actually duel over it, but they sure got close. Interestingly, even through all the drama, Savivi still won the governor election. Yeah, nice try, Archibald. Move over. So we've talked a bit about Nancy Drew Jackson's political lawyer shenanigans, but what about all that planting and slave owning he was doing as a side hustle? Well, he built a general store in Gelatin, and he also bought a big fat 640-acre plantation that was named after a turtle hermit. Later on, he added like 360 freaking acres to it. Like, that's over 1,000 acres. Jeez. And what kind of plantation was this? Cotton. And you know how it is with cotton. You start with 9 slaves, then you raise it to 44, then you end up with 150. Like, this dude probably had like 300 slaves belonging only to him throughout his freaking lifetime. But hey, let's not get ahead of ourselves on this timeline. Okay, we cannot have some uppity rich dude own hundreds of slaves and not give the slaves some airtime, okay? So what was going on with these slaves? Well, they were kept in like 3 different sections on the plantation. There were like 5 to 10 people in 400 square foot brick or log cabins, which is like a lot more accommodating than most other plantations. Nancy Drew Jackson gave the slaves some knives and guns and fishing equipment so they could hunt their own food. Sometimes he even gave them allowance money to go to 7-Eleven. Oh, don't get me wrong, Nancy Drew Jackson had a whip in the other hand, okay? Money over morals, this is a fully functional Jeff Bezos operation, okay, people? Like, it still very much sucked, and that's an understatement. This is evidenced by the fact that every now and then, he'd have to put an ad in the paper for slaves that were lucky enough to get away from the Amazon cotton facility. He would even sometimes offer to, like, pay more if slave catchers pre-whipped them. That is wild, man. What a world it was. Let's shift gears here. Remember all that drama I just talked about with Nancy Drew Jackson's marriage being questionably legitimate and whatnot? Yeah, word got out, and some neighborhood buster named Charlie Dickinson started talking the devil's smack in the local newspaper, and this whole situation ended up in a freaking Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel. Yeah, another one. And by the way, Charlie Dickinson won nationals. You don't duel Charlie Dickinson. I'm dead serious. Like, Nancy Drew Jackson had this whole plan to let Charlie fire first so that he can be less accurate when he plays his cards too quickly. Too bad it was Ixodia immediately. Nancy Drew ended up with a bullet so close to his heart that it couldn't be removed without killing him. So yeah, it was Nancy Drew Jackson's turn now. And let me say this, after that close call, he didn't miss.
Ruh-roh.
So after killing a man, of course he's going to become a social pariah anyways, because duels are the stupid early 2000s MTV productions of this era. If Nancy Drew died in that first shot, people would have been talking nonsense about Charlie as well and making him a pariah. Okay, so after all that hullabaloo about the governor position from before and the freaking Yu-Gi-Oh! Duel that just happened where Nancy Drew killed a man, this dude, understandably, is looking for a reputation boost. And that's when he met the ice cream man. Remember? The ice cream man? He straight up killed Alexander Hammy Tammy and Tommy J's trying to banish him from the kingdom. I mean, sure, Mr. Burr was a DC pariah, but everyone in Tennessee was none the wiser about that. Okay, not true. They knew, they just didn't care. It's Tennessee, folks. Nobody knows the real reason why the ice cream man is in town, but it sure looked like he was gonna build a small military and take over Spanish Florida and chase all the Spaniards out of Texas without anybody giving this gormless man permission to do that. And Nancy Drew Jackson was like super on board with it, because there was all this roommate drama going on with Spain. They weren't stopping the Native Americans from raiding. They weren't returning slaves that ran away into their territory. And honestly, they didn't really have any obligation to do any of that, but you know how straight up petty these North Americans can get sometimes. But yeah, Nancy Drew was all wrapped up in the ice cream man's nonsense, and he was giving speeches to the ragtag anti-Spain militia, all like, quote, "You gotta be ready. You gotta be ready. At any second, keep your finger on the chrono trigger," unquote. That man is out of his mind, I tell you. He was like a true believer in this whole sloppily made drive Spain out of America plan. Like, he honestly thought that was a straight up possibility. Nancy Drew wanted to force Spain out of North America with like 2,000 people holding guns and then trade with them like nothing happened. I don't understand the logistics of this, but I guess it's one of those you had to be there situations. Yeah. Nancy Drew Jackson was, like, very involved, though. Like, he was offering up his boats and CVS coupons and stuff. But then he found out that Aaron Burr was freaking lying and wanted to take over New Orleans and Louisiana and create his own empire with the possible endgame of taking over the U.S. He also found out that freaking James Wilkinson was in on it, and he hates that guy. So he started writing vague freaking letters and sending them to President Tommy Pickles, and when Tommy decided it was time for the treason trial, Nancy Drew was untouched. In fact, Nancy Drew organized the military team that organized the arrest of the ice cream man. Nancy Drew, you're a slippery customer, all right? The ice cream man's treason trial legal team had Nancy Drew go all the way to Richmond, Virginia to testify, but realized that that was actually a terrible idea at the last second. Nancy Drew Jackson don't play. So yeah, the 1808 election came around, and interestingly, Nancy Drew Jackson was all about Man Ray and not Billy Madison, who all the Tommy J fans were behind. I have a feeling that minor preference is gonna escalate later, but yeah, after yet another chaotic situation, Nancy Drew Jackson went home and relaxed for a while. Well, he relaxed until the War of 1812, which for Nancy Drew might as well have been called the War to Avenge My Mom. As we know, there was a whole lot of passive-aggressive stuff going on between the U.S. and the tea-sippers all over again. And we know the international relations perspective, but there were other reasons too. Like, the U.S. wanted to take a lot more land, but the tea sippers wanted to not let that happen and create a whole allegedly neutral Native American territory that the tea sippers would still watch over so they can run their little fur trade operation they had going. Oh, the Yankees wanted Florida and a piece of Canada too, but whatever. War is declared on the tea sippers, and Nancy Drew Jackson is all like, let me at them, let me at them, let me at them. I got 2,500 troops, put them up, put them up. But Billy Madison waited a couple months before actually letting Nancy Drew participate. I mean, from the president's perspective, he's probably all like, man, you didn't even vote for me to have this job right now, so I'm waiting a little bit before I trust you with anything. I mean, I don't know if Billy Madison could afford to be petty like that in this situation, because those tea sippers were on a straight-up murder spree at the beginning of American Revolution Redux. But whatever. Petty is as petty does. So the beginning of 1813 comes around, and Nancy Drew Jackson finally gets permission to take 2,000 some odd volunteers with guns and go to New Ovaltines and fight against the tea sippers and some native people. And he had to take orders from James Wilkinson. He hates that guy. Nonetheless, the general was like, look, I don't know what to do with you people. So go around the Mississippi area. The Natchez tribe is there. I want you to look scary. In Nancy Drew's head, he was like, Native Americans? Boring. But he obeyed anyways. A month later, Johnny Strongarms Jr., the new war secretary, tried to strong-arm Nancy Drew Jackson's whole volunteer coalition. I have the letter right here. Quote,
buddy, we don't know what to do with you people. Y'all need to go home. I mean, you can donate your supplies, but you ain't part of the equation here. Bye. 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 Unquote.
Of course, Nancy had to write a letter back and was like, quote, you know, this is some straight up nonsense. We've been telling you that we were freaking ready for months, but whatever, we'll give y'all our supplies. But I'm not dismissing them willy-nilly. No, we're marching home to Nashville together. Deal with it. Unquote. That turned out to be a terrible idea. Everyone was getting sick on the march. Nancy Drew had to pay for provisions out of his pocket, so he basically turned into everybody's scary cheap dad for a month. And when they got home, he told everybody what happened, and everybody was like, okay, I see you, old hickory. Respect. I mean, now he was super broke, but one of his assistants, like, talked with the secretary strong arms and got him to pay Jackson back what he had to pay during that whole trip. But whatever, it didn't take long for Nancy Drew Jackson to get involved in some other petty nonsense. Like, he was a wingman for one of his friends that got into a duel with the brother of the dude who got the refund, and he also got into some crazy street fight with the same brothers. This time he was teamed up with Johnny Coffey, his brigadier general for horses, and like, Nancy Drew Jackson ended up with a freaking bullet in his shoulder at the end of the whole ordeal. Like, I don't get it. Can't you stay out of trouble for 3 seconds, bro? Anyways, September is around the corner now, and the Creek tribe is fed up. There was a faction called the Red Sticks, and they were like, we're done. We're done. There are too many colonizers around these parts. So they went to a fort and just, like, killed everybody. Like, they didn't even care if you were Native or not. Like, if you didn't agree with their hot take and you were Creek, like, the Red Sticks were still killing you alongside the colonizers. So yeah, they broke off with the Creek Confederacy, who was looking for peace, and interestingly got some tea sippers to help them out with the obvious war to come. So of course everyone was like, Nancy Drew, you have like 2,000 some odd people, please just take care of this. His arm was still in the sling from that stupid street fight, and he had to march out anyway. But yeah, he made a supply fort. General Coffee beat some Red Sticks in a battle. Nancy Drew Jackson beat some Red Sticks that had stormed one of the Creek towns that didn't agree with their radical solutions. So yeah, winter came, and troops were dropping out left and right because their contracts were expiring. To fix this shortage, Nancy Drew decided to go and try and meet up with the Georgia militia so they could, like, tag team. Yeah, they got attacked by the Red Sticks on the way. I mean, they held their own, but they had to go straight back to the fort because there was no way they could deal with all that all the way to Georgia. But yeah, Nancy was sick of this, so he marched his troops to a big Red Stick fort. It was a good fort, so they had to commit to charging in there. And they got some friendly Creek people to do diversions or whatever. But yeah, the Red Sticks were outnumbered like 2-1, so it ended as expected. 3 weeks later, the whole Creek War was over. The Great Red Eagle surrendered. Some Red Sticks did escape to Florida, though. The big boy army took in Nancy Drew Jackson as a bridge builder general after this success. He even drew up a treaty that forced the Creeks to give up like 23 million acres of land.
What?
Yes, all the Creeks. Even the ones who cooperated with the U.S. during the whole ordeal. So basically, the Red Sticks were proven right with this action. The Westerners did the natives real dirty on that one. Oh, and Nancy Drew Jackson still wanted to fight the tea sippers and Spanish rice cakes, even though he had a terrible case of pooping too much disease. Yeah, Nancy Drew was mad at Spain because they gave guns to the Red Sticks. That broke the treaty rules. And letting the tea-sipping troops have fun in Florida also broke the treaty rules. But Nancy Drew Jackson couldn't get it through his crazy orphan head that the only reason Spain was doing all that was because he was running around with troops and running his mouth being all like, "We're gonna invade Spain! Let's invade Spain!" Of course they're gonna beef up security if you're running your mouth like that. But whatever, they had a tiny little battle about it. The Battle of Pepsi Cola, and Nancy won it with Spain surrendering and the tea sippers deciding to dip. A couple weeks later, our homeboy learns that the tea sippers got their eyes on New Orleans. So, of course, Nancy Drew Jackson said, "You know what, Spain? You can keep Pepsi Cola for now," and went straight to New Orleans while planting some people in Alabama in case the tea sippers wanted to go that way. So Nancy Drew Jackson shows up in New Orleans and sees that everyone's from Spain or Creole, so he declares martial law because he doesn't know who's gonna be loyal or not. He also made a deal with a French pirate so they could help out. So that means he had military units of black people on his side now and paid them all the same, which really ruffled some feathers, but Nancy Drew Jackson was like, quote, "Listen, listen, 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 listen. I love being racist too. I promise you, I'm racist just like you. But nobody is going to have the time to worry about their stupid paychecks if the tea-sippers win. So you need to get out of my face and prepare for a crazy battle." Unquote. Then the tea-sippers showed up. Nancy had like 5,000 people who never thought in a big boy anything before. And the tea-sippers had like 10,000 people who had to deal with freaking Neapolitan ice cream in previous battles. So yeah, they show up on the Mississippi River, and Nancy pushes them back a little. A week later, the tea-sippers really go all out. But Nancy's forts were built very well. The morning fog went away, and the tea-sippers just charged, which was stupid, because Nancy's peeps were hiding, so they could just pick them off. Like, that battle was a total freaking disaster for the tea-sippers. You don't just run into a labyrinth willy-nilly. It doesn't matter how many people you have if you can't see where the bullets are coming from. Jeez Louise. Nancy Drew Jackson only had like 13 people die and 19 go missing. The tea sippers? 300 are dead, 500 are missing, and over 1,000 are hurt. So yeah, they retreated, but then Genn's Treaty happened and the whole 1812 ordeal was officially over. And well, you know what wars do to reputations. On top of that, Nancy Drew won his battle at the very end of the war, so everybody remembers him most and he can do the "I'm a War Hero" national tour. Reputation? Restored for now, at least. He hauled his butt to Congress and got a gold medal and everything. But the thing is, that battle was freaking useless, okay? Like, peace talks were already happening. This war could have ended with or without it, to be completely honest. The only real impact the battle had was letting Nancy Drew Jackson go on the "I'm a War Hero" national tour. But, I mean, there is another way to look at it. Like, if the T-Zippers won, they might have held on to New Orleans. Or Spain could have took it. The Louisiana Purchase might have been sold back to Spain. Who knows? Like, the T-Zippers did promise to give the Louisiana chunk back to Spain. And Spain thought the T-Zippers won like they promised they would. Yikes, I wish I was a fly on the wall for that conversation. Another part of Genn's treaty that was signed by the U.S. was giving the land back to the Creek tribes that were kicked out. But since Nancy Drew Jackson drove everyone out of New Orleans, he made that part of the treaty easily ignorable. Ah, yes, the good old diplomatic relations precedent of not fully honoring signed agreements without any consequences. Oh, and after the battle, during the process of signing the treaty, Nancy Drew still had New Orleans under martial law. And, like, Nancy detained a legislator for, like, no reason. And a judge was like, hey, I think you're an idiot and we gotta settle this in the courtroom. And then Nancy detained the judge, too. And then a senator wrote an anonymous article that was all like, hey, Nancy Drew, you can't just keep your troops here under martial law when literally all the threats are gone. And then Nancy Drew tracked that man down and detained him too. This man is unhinged. What is your problem, Nancy? What is your damage, man? Six people from his militia were like, dude, no offense, you're crazy. I'm out of here. Nancy Drew ordered their executions. He executed six of his own people, and the war was already over. Nancy Drew Jackson, why are you always making a mess of yourself like this? Good God, girl, get a grip. But whatever. After he ended his mini dictatorship, he went home, signed a couple unfair treaties with the Cherokee and Chickasaw people, so now the U.S. has more of Tennessee and Kentucky. But it looks like this guy's gonna get into another big fat battle with the natives. You see, there were a bunch of tribes over by Florida who were mingling and housing escaped slaves, and every now and then they would show up in Georgia and steal some groceries from the Westerners. So yeah, that's starting to happen and things are starting to escalate, but let's not get too far ahead of ourselves. There's an election coming up. An election. I mean, it's no wonder everybody was looking at Nancy Drew Jackson and wondering if he was gonna, like, run for Prezi-Wezi, because he was literally in the middle of the War Hero National Tour. Congress gave him a medal last month. How can he not be an 1816 potential president? But yeah, we definitely got some spicy meatballs showing up in the political sphere these days, that's for sure. We definitely won't be hearing the last of this schmuck, that's also for sure. If you've got something to say about this episode, about the podcast, or about, I don't know, Amy's House of Wine, you can find Garbled Twistery on Facebook and Twitter, or you can head to garbledtwistery.net and send a message in the contact section, or you can email moi. My email is Rafiq, that's R-A-F-I-Q, at garbledtwistery.net. Also, I have a Patreon, so if you go to patreon.com and find Garbled Twistery, you'll gain not only the access, but you'll gain the ability to determine what topics yet to be Patreon-exclusive bonus content. The current bonus in the works is an episode on trading your cards with your games. Competitively. Fascinating, isn't it? Anyways, next time, we're looking at another new face in this 1816 election, William Crawford. What's he all about? Let's find out.
This is the ending. I'm ending it now.
Land fraud dirt.